I was scandal. My name's Jackie Booth, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. Man, this is awesome being down here. Wasn't sure I was going to make it down here from Clarion, you know, because it was the weather just didn't seem like it was going to cooperate. But, you know, them weathermen are liars. Now, they need a program, and it's not the one we watch them on TV, I don't think, you know. I want their job. They get paid to lie, just like politicians. Yeah. And so I wasn't quite certain I was going to come down here. And I called Kim last night and I told him, I said, I don't know, this is not looking so good. You know, we just trust God, you know. Just trust God. And we woke up this morning and it didn't look like it was supposed to look out there. And here we are, you know. And it was a great time. We just crossed over that West Virginia line. And I said, oh, Lord, have mercy. We're in West Virginia. And my friend Ron said, I think we ought to pray. I also told some of my people up home, I said, now looky here, if we ain't back home in about a week, y'all best send a posse down there. I heard about you guys down here in West Virginia. There's some interbreeding going on here. Oh, how bad am I? Get over it. Pray for me. I need all the help I can get. Well, you know, I did celebrate 21 years on March the 1st, and nobody's more surprised about it than I am.
All right.
Yeah, thank you. Thank God. Yeah, thank God. Because there was a time in my life I couldn't go 21 minutes without picking up a drink. Yeah, and to be here today and clean and, you know, just and sober and just enjoying life, and, man, it's just awesome. You know, it really, really is. I do have a home group. My home group is Clarion Monday night for now. I'm thinking about switching home groups, which you can do that. You know, I've done it before, and there's no, why change things now? You know, it's working. But anyhow, I do have a sponsor, and my sponsor has 31 years of sobriety. My sponsor has a sponsor. My sponsor's sponsor has a sponsor. So we're all sponsored out, man. You know, and I sponsor, okay? And let's see, what else can I tell you? Well, I was born on... I know I got this here accent. Now, another friend of mine that I play guitar with told me that y'all probably understand me down here. And I probably, you know, probably understand you guys, too. And I said, pretty near. And... but anyhow, I was born on the old Corn Planter Indian Reservation up in, I'm underwater now because of the Kenzo Dam up by Warren, Pennsylvania. And, but I was born to an alcoholic mother. And my father, I was born in December, my father passed away in February. And it was a good idea that she didn't raise me. And so I was adopted off the reservation. I was raised by a white family 25 miles southeast of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And my dad was born down here in some little holler down here in West Byboy, Virginia. And you know, for a lot of years of my life, I watched people treat him really badly because of the way he talked, okay, the way he spoke. They treated him like he was stupid. And I saw this as I was growing up, and I thought, you know, I'm not going to have that happen to me. I'm not going to have that happen to me. So I started picking up the dictionary, and I started reading the dictionary every single day. Even as a little kid, I read that dictionary, and I started studying them words, and I started practicing how I was going to talk. You know, so I didn't have, I wasn't treated like that. And, oh, I'd say probably about 8 years ago, I woke up one morning, and my ex-husband, the most recent, that's why it says Jackie Han in that there, Jackie H in that daggum hickey, because when I was asked to do that, I still had an H at the end of my name. Okay, but I reclaimed my real last name, you know, and so I am now Booth, and I have declared my freedom! Exclamation point. But I studied them words because I didn't want to be treated like that. And about 8 years ago, I woke up one morning, and all of a sudden, this stuff started coming out my face. And I'm like, what is going on? And my ex-husband looked at me, and he said, what are you doing? And I said, I don't know. And I couldn't quit it. And it just kept flowing out of, you know, I was fetching and toting and poking. And I just didn't know where this was coming from. And I finally realized something. You know, for all them years, I had worn this false face. You know, my people have a whole society called False Face Society. And they're really funky-looking masks. And what they do is they scare off the sicknesses in the fall. okay? And this is this false face thing, this putting on airs and talking with these big $64,000 words, you know? Well, actually, it's $42,000 because that's what my student loans are. Those words were all part of a false face. I was just putting on airs. I needed to feel superior. So I used them big words. And then when this started coming out, I realized, wow, this is really who I am. I'm not that. And I could use them. You know, I was several years ago, I got accepted to Harvard Law School. And I don't think I could go stand in front of a court of law and tell the judge that my client was a feared. I don't think that would go over pretty good. I don't know. I never tried it. But so I realized that was just part of that false face. And, you know, that was, you know, I was 12 years sober. You know, and that just came upon me. And there's been many things over the years that I've been sober that have come up as revelation to me, the things that I didn't know about myself. You know, God reveals things to me as He knows that I can handle them. First step says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, our lives had become unmanageable. Well, when I came into the rooms, I was exposed to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous back in 1986. I was facing a 7 to 12 year jail sentence for beating this guy up. I was not a nice drunk. Not at all. I had the Napoleon syndrome. I had the little guy syndrome in a female body, you know? And I didn't like fighting women because y'all fought like girls, you know, that pull the hair and, you know, like that there. And my kind of fighting was, you know, you pick up a pool stick and you crack somebody upside the head. You know, that's my kind of fighting. And I am very grateful to tell you that it will be 11 years this May since I hit anybody. Spouses and children do not count. They was me. Alright, if they just fly right and go by my program, it'd be all okay. We just need to get with the program, which is called mine. And but you know, I was facing that 7 to 12 year jail. And back in 1986, in my neck of the woods, if you were kind to the judge and you knew the judge and all like that, you could go to rehab. And you know, they'll say, oh, isn't that nice? You went to rehab. You recognize you have an alcohol problem. That's so cute. You know? And so, and it just so happened that the judge that I was going before, he happened to be real good friends with my dad. And so, you know, my sentence was, I didn't think I got anything like on paper, you know, that I had probation. And the more I kept pondering that thought, I do recall that I had something. I had to abide by something, which I never did, because like once I walked out of the courtroom, as if, you know, I forgot about it as soon as the door shut behind me. You know, the only thing that I do recall I had to do is I had to pay this fellow's salary until he was able to go back to work. And I had to pay his hospital bills, okay? And I will tell you that I paid his salary for 2 years before he could return to work, and it took me until 1996 to pay off his hospital bills. Now, this was in 1986, so that tells you I put a hurting on this boy. And I didn't even know him. He walked into the courtroom, and I had no recollection of who this man was. I didn't know him because I didn't know. I mean, it wasn't important to me to remember who I beat up until you get busted for it. And so I was exposed to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous then because they allowed me to come out of detox after 8 days. As long as I told the I promised the doctor I would go to an AA meeting. And so I did. And I walked into the rooms and... And there I am in all my glory. I got my chaps on and my boots and my leather jacket, you know, and my hair was down to my butt, and I was all of about 84 pounds then, you know. And if you read that story, Belle of the Bar, okay, she's talking about how pretty she was with her lipstick all over her face and a sweater that's been on for 3 days, you know, and, you know, guys were buying her drinks just to get her away from them, you know. Yeah, that would be me. Except in all leather, you know. And so I go walking down the steps, and this little lady comes up to me. She was so cute. She come walking up to me, and she says, oh, hi, honey, we're so happy to see you. And I'm reaching in my pocket looking for my checkbook, because the only time anybody was ever nice to me was when they wanted my money or they wanted, you know, my dope or something, you know. I do say I'm an ex-dope fiend because dope got me here faster, okay? And And then or they wanted sex. And honest to God, she was cute, but she just wasn't my type. But I didn't know what she really wanted. And she said something to me that stuck with me. She said, "You don't ever have to get drunk again. It's the first drink that gets you drunk." I thought, that is so stupid. The first drink never got me drunk. But see, they taught me in detox. It was the third one. It was the third one that got me drunk. Okay? So she didn't know. She didn't go to that. She needed to go there because she was wrong. These doctors told me it was the third one. And so I got the book, because that was suggested for me to do. I got the book, and you go home and you read this book, right? So I went home, and I didn't want to read that book. But see, I was an inquiring mind. You see, I needed to know stuff about you people, because you said something at that meeting. You will meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. That stuck. So I thought, it was your stories in that book. So I started reading that. But see, I needed to be one up on y'all. Because I had to be up here, because I felt way down here. You know, I was a bottom feeder. And so I needed to know stuff about you so that I could hold it over your noggins. And I read those stories, and they were okay. They were sort of interesting. But then I flipped back, and I went to the first 164 pages. I didn't like that at all. I took that book back, you know, because y'all have that AA library. You say, if you can't afford one, you can borrow it, you know. And so I borrowed it, and I took it promptly back the following Monday. And they asked me if I was sticking around for the meeting, and I said, nah, I can't stay. You know why I couldn't stay? Because my brother was coming back from Disney World, and he brought me a present. He brought me Minnie and Mickey Mouse salt and pepper shakers. And you know what? Them Minnie and Mickey Mouse salt and pepper shakers never kept me sober. They got all rusty on top, and I couldn't get the tops off anymore, probably because it spilled so daggum many beers on them. But no, actually, it wasn't that. It was the tequila that did it to the salt shaker, you know. And I found something out. It wasn't the tequila that made me take back things I never stole. It was that daggum salt. But I figured that out after 18 years of sobriety, and I thought, what the heck, I'm on this, gone this far, I might as well keep going. But you see, that's how I was powerless. I could not stop drinking. You know, I couldn't get, there wasn't a psychic change happening inside of Monogan that I could comprehend, that it was the booze. I thought it was the bars. See, I went to bars, and that's where I got in trouble. That's where I got in fights. That's where I got arrested. That's where all this bad stuff happened. You know, it was in the bars. I didn't go far enough down in the alphabet after the letter B. I should have went down to the L instead of stopping at the A, you know, at the bar. I should have went down to the booze. And I was just very sick. I never went back to the dope after 1986, but I did go back out and drink for the next 4 years. And it was the worst 4 years that I ever spent. Because by the time I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was drinking a case of Iron City and a fifth of Mezcal every single day, Monday through Thursday. Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays was an entirely different story, man. It was the weekend, okay? And if it was any kind of season, it was on. You know, basketball, football, fishing, hunting, tourists. You know, I mean, well, it didn't matter what season it was time to drink and party, you know. And I had this little bebé at home, and you know, on the outside, if you looked on the outside of my house, I looked like June Cleaver, except I didn't wear an apron. Okay, I drew the line at wearing an apron. All right, they just didn't look too cool with a Harley shirt. You know, you just can't make an apron look cool with a Harley shirt. You just lose that cool. You know, something about that. But on the outside of it all looked all happy. It all was happy-go-dicky, you know. Everything was looked good, you know. I had my second legal hostage going on, you know, and he was going to work, and I was, you know, baking brownies, and, you know. But I'm doing it with a beer in my hand. You know, screw the shot glasses and the little glass. I mean, I never drank anything out of it. If I couldn't grab it by the neck and chug that sucker, it wasn't worth drinking. You know, and I had this little baby going around there, and this is where, you know, my life was so unmanageable. But yet I couldn't comprehend. I knew that it was wrong. In my gut, I knew it was wrong, but in my noggin, I couldn't. Just wasn't making it. You know. till finally I came to the rooms of A&A through the back door through Al-Anon. I am a very grateful member of Al-Anon too, 13 years, thank you very much. So watch it. I got two fingers. If you want to shut me up, just grab them fingers and I can't talk. Okay? I came in through the rooms of Al-Anon because my second legal hostage was just as big of a drunk as what I was. Because, you know, we got to marry them. You know, you got to marry. You got to make honest men out of these guys. I mean, seriously, you got to straighten them up. I told him what a big drunk he was. So he went to the same rehab that I came out of, okay? And so I started going to Al-Anon. And I was hearing things like detach with love. And you mean we can't hit them? Shooting them's totally out of the picture now. He's in rehab. He comes out, he's going to be sober. I can't get away with it. That's not right. So I came in through the rooms of Al-Anon. Well, I went to the Friday night Maryville meeting one night, and there used to be an Al-Anon meeting upstairs. And they didn't have it that night. Now, what am I going to do? I'm going to have to go downstairs. So I went downstairs to the A&A meeting, and I walked down there, and there was all these people I used to party with, and I heard went and got a good dose of dead, you know? And there they were sitting in there. They were living happy, joyous, and free. And I was like, wow, you're still alive, you see? And they were, and I was amazed. I really was, because those were the people that I looked at and said, if I ever get that bad, I'm going to quit. And then I realized that I was the person that people were looking at sitting at the end of the bar going, if I ever get that bad, I became that person that those people were to me. You know, and that was like a real revelation. But they said, you know how you call for anniversaries? You're going to love this one. Okay. See, I didn't understand nothing about sobriety, okay? So they call for anniversaries, and boy, I jump right up there and I say, I got me 4 years. No, I did not neither. I just had gone to a bar, okay? I hadn't been arrested. I hadn't written out a bad check. I hadn't hit anybody outside of the people that I was married to or gave birth to, okay? So that's got to be sober, right? And so y'all just were real kind, and you're looking at me going, yeah, where'd she come from? I never seen her before, you know. And so the chairman gives me, you know, that little 4-year medallion, you know, and I didn't know what to do, so I just snagged it up and, you know, yeah, thanks, see you later. And I went back and sat down in my chair, okay? And this guy gets up there, and he's sitting right where I'm standing, well, not here, but up there, and he was talking about all this stuff about how he was a chameleon and how he lived in fear and how he could be whatever it is that you needed him to be so he could get what he needed to get. And I'm thinking, who told him about me? I know who it was. And I looked over at this one woman that I used to party with. Because she was a gossiper, you know. She was one of them ones at the bar fly that knew everybody's business and who was zooming who and all like that there. Yeah, she knew it. And I thought, boy, me and her's going to have a talk out in that parking lot. I can see it now. You know, but I sat and I listened. And then he came up to me after the meeting and he said, you know, we have another meeting tomorrow. It's a different kind of meeting. And he says, and he mentioned Narcotics Anonymous. And so I went to that meeting the next day. My first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting was March the 23rd. Now, I hadn't picked up a drink or any other substance since February 28th. Because, see, on February 28th, God put a question in my head that I would have not have thought of. I didn't think this way. I still don't think this way. But the question was, Jackie, what if you don't like death? And I still don't have an answer for that. Okay? Because there ain't no coming back. It's not a commercial break. You know, you don't stay dead for like, you know, 3 minutes and then, you know, somebody changes the channel and there you are again. Okay? It doesn't happen that way. You stay dead. You're dead, you're dead. And that's when I said the most powerful prayer I ever said was, God help. And he said, cool. And for about, I don't know how long of a period of time, but I felt this peace and calmness that happened on the inside of me that I never felt before. And I knew that I knew that I knew at that point in time that everything was going to be okie dokie. And then immediately, Oh, that crazy came back. And for the next 5 months, nobody would give me a full cup of coffee. Okay, I shook. So I didn't drink coffee when I came here. Y'all turned me into a coffee drinker. I didn't smoke cigarettes neither. And boy, I'm out there smoking like a... And I didn't cuss as much. I learned me some words to put together in here, though. I let me tell you what, and I know right when to use them. But the thing is that I shook so bad. My body was in such a fit, you know, and so was my mind. And I picked up a sponsor. I picked a lady up that I thought was gabbing about me. I picked her up as a sponsor, which that didn't turn out to be a real good idea because her and I were friends for about 20 years before. And she couldn't tell me what it was that I needed to hear, you know. But there was another lady there that I liked just fine, and she was an older woman. But see, she wasn't like me, so I thought. Okay, because I only seen her at A&A meetings. I never seen her at NA, so I didn't think she couldn't relate to me. Of course, I was different, you see. I'm different. You know, by that time, I was a single mother. And go figure, right? My second legal hostage is 6'6", and I scared that boy. And I filed a 5'2", you know? But anyhow, this little woman, you know, she wasn't like me. And then one day, right, it was during Cook Force Conference in September, and she come bebopping through the door of that NA meeting. I looked at her and I said, "Pete, what are you doing here?" And she said, "What makes you think that I'm not just like you?" I said, "Because you're old." I had never seen an old duck thing before. You know, they always die, you know. And so I was like stunned stupid, okay. And so I asked her, I worked up enough courage. Imagine me, my first sponsor used to call me the Billy Badass Psycho Bitch from Hell. And I was afeard to ask this little woman to be my sponsor. But I did, and she promptly told me no. I said, a month to ask her, right? But and she told me no, and I said, "You ain't allowed to tell me no." She said, "Oh, yes, I can." And I said, "Why are you telling me no?" She said, "Because it's hunting season." Okay, I need a map because I can't figure this sucker out. I mean, I can't get these points to match up. And then she started giggling and she told me she was just kidding me, you know. And she looked at me and she said, "Jackie, you must be extremely sick or extremely desperate." And I said, "Guilty on all charges." And that was the first time I ever admitted the guilt. Okay, I had ever admitted it. There was always some lame excuse. But what she did with me was that she didn't start me out on them steps. She started me out on the four absolutes. And if you don't know what the four absolutes are, ask your sponsor. And if your sponsor don't know what the four absolutes are, have them ask their sponsor. Find somebody that does. Because she started me out defining each one of those absolutes. Okay? Because she told me to turn to that first page in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, in the third edition. And it's a big blue page, you know, the first page, actually. I didn't know that that was the first page. I thought the first page said Alcoholics Anonymous on it. Okay, that wasn't it. I went all the way through the table of contents, and she kept telling me, "That ain't it. Don't you got a blue page in your book?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "What's on it?" And I said, "Nothing." She said, "That's exactly what you know about staying sober." Oh, I didn't like that. People don't talk to me like that. Didn't she know who I was? I beat people up. But you know what, though? She talked to me in a manner that she talked to my soul. Okay, she talked to my heart. She didn't talk to my head. She talked to my heart. And we worked through those four absolutes, and then I walked through that first step. And she told me the second most important book I'd ever owned was a dictionary. And I started looking up those words. Do you know I didn't know what the word "we" meant? Now remember, I told you in the very beginning, I used to study that dictionary, and I used to pride myself on my intellect because they tested me when I came out of that detox and told me I got some big number and I should be really smart and join some menstrual, no, Mensa. But that's supposed to be for smart people, you know. I'm thinking, dang, you know. And anyhow, so they, and I didn't know what "we" meant. I really didn't. I didn't understand the concept of "we". I knew what "we" was. It was always what I had in my Levi's. I just didn't know, and I didn't know what powerlessness was. I didn't know what power was. I had to go look up the word power. I had to look up the word admit. I had to look up the word manage to understand what unmanageability was. I had to look up the root word and find out that un meant not. Okay? And that the ness in powerlessness was my actions. Okay? And so she gave me a list of these questions that to answer on step one. And the very first question, every time I've wanted to pick up a drink, I thought of that first question. And it is, how have you placed your life or the lives of others in jeopardy? And give three examples. I've never gotten past that question. Because as soon as I realize how fatal this disease is, I don't think about it no more. You know? And step two says, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Power greater than me? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? My wonderful sponsor, Grandma Petey, at the Marionville meeting has me stand behind her big old T-Bird. And she said, Jeff, she said, stand behind my car. I said, okay. So I see it starts up. And I see lights come on. And then I see the backup lights come on. I said, Pete, I'm back here. She said, I know where you are. And it starts... I said, Pete, I'm back here. She said, I know. You think you're so powerful, you stop my car. She always gave me no place to come back. You know, I got nothing, you know. And so the whole ride home, she was telling me, you know, did you make the sun come up today? Nope, I didn't drink Minute Maid orange juice. You know that commercial? Keeps talking about that. That's so cute, isn't it? I love that commercial. But it wasn't out then, but it suffices for now. And could you make a tree grow? Could you make the seed that makes the tree grow? Do you make it rain? I'm Indian. Give me a minute. I have no responsibility. Just so you know, for the record, I have nothing to do with snow. I'm Native American. I'm not Eskimo. Okay? Call that Verizon number, if that's correct. Okay? I had to come to these meetings to come to believe. I had to come to believe in something that was more powerful than booze. I had to believe in something that was more powerful than my thought process. Okay? Well, okay, so you give me that. You give me, I came to believe that there was a power greater than me. It was her T-Bird. And now you tell me I'm insane. How's that going to work? She told me that my recovery would be based in three things. Number one, my attitude of gratitude. And in a few short seasons I've been sober, I have yet met a person go back out that was grateful. Okay. The second thing would be the evidence that I found out about my own history with booze. Not your history. Your history ain't going to keep me sober. What I'm talking to you about tonight ain't going to keep you sober. My story ain't going to keep you sober. Your story will. Okay, and then there's a third thing, and I can't remember what it is. It's important, though. Oh, that I've got so many things going on in my head right now, I can't remember everything. Give me a break. It was a long ride. I was outside in the cold. My brain froze. Oh, you're not believing that, are you? But the third thing is that I lived my life on all my failures. It was time to build on successes. So if I could stay sober for 5 minutes, I have the ability and the capability, two separate words, to stay sober another five. Okay? And that's what I built it on. So when you tell me that I'm insane, I have to go back and look at the evidence. Now, sane women don't lose custody of their children because they want to become the next Janis Joplin and leave their children behind for booze. I did. Sane women don't stand at point-blank range and make the fun of the size of a man's genitalia when he's got a gun pointed at your head. It hurt. I just got a little divot. Sane people do not drive cars or motorcycles under the influence as much alcohol as I used to consume, or take other people's cars or motorcycles. I found out how insane I was when I worked that step. Step three says that we made a decision. Stop right there. Time out. I don't do that, okay? I don't make a decision. Not because I was afeared to make the decision. I had full capability of making a decision. I just didn't want to. Because you see, if I did, that meant I was accountable. And what if everything went south? Okay? So I let my parents, exes, children, judges, police, ambulance drivers, I let total strangers make decisions for me. Okay? And so don't tell me I can't make a decision. So I called Pete. Grandma Pete. She what? I said, I can't. I'm struggling with this make a decision part. She said, did you dress yourself this morning? I looked down. I got one pink sock on and I got one green. I thought, man, she is good. She could see me through the phone. And she could tell by the slight pause on the phone that I was looking at my attire. And she said, let's put it this way. Did you get, what are you having for supper tonight? I said, fried chicken. She said, why? I said, because that's what I want. She said, you want sobriety? Well, yeah, you just made a decision. Is it that easy? I thought I was going to have to go to college or something, take a class, write an essay, I don't know, give blood. I didn't know what was required. I thought it was going to be, it was more difficult than what I was imagining it to be, okay? To turn my will and my life over. What is that? I don't have a will. I thought she meant like, you know, your last will and testament, you know, or whatever. Now, I ain't got me one then. She explained to me that my will was my thoughts, my emotions, and my beliefs. Okay? And that my life was my actions that I took to carry my will out. Now, being that I was such a success, would I be willing to turn all that over? Yeah. Who wouldn't be? Well, what do I got to turn it over to? To God, as I understand God. Well, we got to stop there because, like, you know, I got over being Catholic, okay? Seriously. And nothing against Catholicism, it just didn't work for me, okay? I got stumped, so I did that. What you just read today in today's Daily Reflections. I had the good orderly direction. I had the group of drunks. Okay, and I could do that because see, I was watching y'all do this deal, and yous were successful, and that gave me hope that I could do it too. You see, so I was following the example set before me with y'all. Okay, that was God to me. And then about 1997, I had the honor and privilege of leading up there at that Harvest of Hope conference up in Erie, and going up 79. I saw one of them big old trucks that had G period, O period, D period. I said, there's God. That's good orderly direction. No, it is not neither. It's guaranteed overnight delivery. Ponder the thought. You take that third step, is it not? Is it not? And it has a little dove on the side of the truck if you pay real close attention to it. Just sort of something similar to the, yeah, that thing. And sweatshirt. I knew it would come up. Step four. Okay, made that searching and fearless moral inventory. Fearless? Does it have to be fearless? Because I'm not sure about it. She said, well, you can, yeah. Well, how do I get that? Well, let's read the big book. So we read that third step. Being convinced. You know, in the 24 hours I've been sober, I've seen so many people stumble and fall, and by the grace of God, some of them make it up and some of them don't. And it seems to be, you know, where in letter C, and Victoria, I think, read the steps where Tom, you read how it works. And letter C says, God put in what if you were sought, period. And then there's that little blank line that goes into the next paragraph. And it says, being convinced we stood at step three. Well, it's in that, at the end of that period, and that blank line seems to be that space where people get tripped up, because that being convinced part doesn't seem to work. That conviction doesn't come. And So I went back and I reviewed. If I'm struggling with step four, it's because I ain't really picked up on three, which means I really haven't fully accepted step two, which means that I'm trying to manage something I'm powerless over. Okay? I got problems with one step. I got to work it backwards, not forwards, and start at the beginning. And so step four, she didn't give me that daggum worksheet. I didn't have the, you know, the pre-printed out where I checked everything off and, you know, and nope. She gave me two notebook, and I had that, you know, the red margin on the one side and stuff. Well, that was my who column. Real simple. Who, what, where, and why. Who did what to me, and where did it affect me, and what was, and the why column is my input. Okay? I had to pray about who, and I had to learn what a resentment was. The difference between a resentment and just being pissed off. Okay? I didn't know the difference. I really didn't. I didn't understand that. Okay? I didn't understand that people could make me angry and I could get over it. But the resentment is the person, even when I think about it, I get a little bile in the back of my throat and I can feel the hair standing up and I just start gritting my teeth. That's a resentment. Okay? And I want them dead is what I want them done, and I want to choke the life out of them. I don't want to shoot them. Anybody can pull a trigger. I want to shoot them. You know? And sorry. I'm over it. And but I had to learn the difference between that. And you know, just when I had to pray about those names for 2 weeks. Because there were some people that just needed to be checked off. I mean, really, my second grade teacher gave me my first slot. That was not a resentment. That was hurt feelings. You know? The guy that molested me when I was 3 years old, that was a resentment. Okay? That was a resentment. The guy that shot me in the head, that was a resentment. Alright? The last man that molested me when I was 14, when I was raped, that's a resentment. Okay? My mother for giving me up for adoption and being a drunk for drinking with me the whole time she was pregnant, that was a resentment. Alright? There was a difference. What they did, I knew. All I had to do was look at the name. I didn't have to write no Britannica encyclopedia version. I just had to write a Reader's Digest version. You know, where did it affect me? Was it my personal, what I thought about myself? Was it social, what I thought you thought about me? Was it my sexual, or was it appropriate or inappropriate? And was it my security? Okay, financial. Social, status. And what was my input? My defects of character. Every single one of my resentments had fear. At first was dishonesty. And then was fear. No wonder I was fearful. I was a liar. I lied to everybody. God was the number one offender on my resentment list. I was number two. Then I had to write down, it says a moral inventory. And if you read the big book, it says about a complete, the business does a complete inventory. It doesn't just do the bad insoluble product. It does a complete inventory. So not only did I write about my resentments and my sexual misconduct and my fears, but I also wrote about the positive things, the things that I liked about me. I had no clue. I had no clue what I liked about me. How could I like me? I was the most disgusting, detestable person on the planet. In my head, I wasn't allowed to write down the things that you told me about me. I had to write things I told me about me that were good. Okay? And so that was tough, but she guided me through the whole thing. I was on the phone with her about 3 or 4 times a day because I was re-feeling all that. I was feeling the pain. I was feeling the anger and that bitterness and that murderous feeling inside. But I was also feeling very sad and grievous. And I couldn't distinguish between the emotion. All right? We studied that 12 and 12 as well, not just out of the big book, but we studied each step out of the 12 and 12, going page by page, highlighting and highlighting, studying the dictionary, understanding words, okay? I always believe that step four would be a hell of a lot easier if we didn't know what step five was. I think there ought to be a special big book for newcomers that step five's covered up, and as soon as they do step four, we rip the tape off and go, ta-da! This is what you get to be now, right? And because that was my problem. See, if I told you about me, if I told Grandmapedia really about me, who I really was on the inside, and what I'd done, and what I felt, what I believed, she could not like me, and I loved her. I really loved her. And she was probably the first human being, she is, other than my dad, the first human being that I loved. I didn't love my children, I resented them. I couldn't do what I wanted to do because I was breastfeeding, I can't drink, can't do anything, I can't smoke cigarettes, can't do what I wanted to do. And so I resented these children. But my sponsor showed, I loved her because she loved me. I trusted her because she trusted me. She showed me what this, the true brotherhood and that fellowshipping was all about. Okay? But she gave it to me first. I just had to hold my hand out and receive it, So when it came time for step five, it tells me we studied the big book and she had me read about who it was that I was going to talk to. Alright, tells me a little bit about it, a little snippet in the big book about it, but it tells me a little bit more about the person I'm going to talk to in 12 and 12. Okay? And so I decided it was her, and I went to her house at about 7 o'clock on a Saturday evening, and I walked out Sunday morning at about 7 a.m. And I walked out of there and I felt like the weight of the world was off my shoulders. I still felt dirty. I still felt yucky, But yet there was something different. I don't know, when I walked outside, it seemed like the world had a little bit more color to it. The leaves looked a little bit greener. And the birds, I could hear the birds just a little bit more clear. There wasn't all that muffled noise, And so I went home. We followed that big book. It says, go home and for 1 hour. Why did she go to bed? She read that big book just like I did. So when I called her about doing step seven, why did she go to bed? She read that big book. It says, you return home for 1 hour. Why did she go to bed? I'm like, Pete, why are you in bed? She said, because I'm tired. I said, it says in the book, you have to be awake. I had to come home and ponder and turn every stone over. You have to wait for me to call you. And so we read the prayer out of the big book. She said, now when we get to the period, I'm hanging up, you go talk to God on your own self. And so that's what I did. Now let me tell you something about that step seven. I did that step seven, and about, 2 years later, so see, now mind you, I got rid of the second legal hostage, and I decided to do that no relationships in that first year deal. Well, that went so well with me, I decided to take another year, so I did it for another year, right? Then so I did that, and I got into a relationship, and I was with that guy. We dated for a little bit, and then he moved in with me, and he came in the house, and he wasn't in my house 2 weeks, and I put him through a big piece of drywall. And I called her up and I said, that step seven didn't work. She said, oh, it most certainly did. I said, no, it did not neither. I just put that man through drywall. And she said, Jackie, it worked. She said, you just ain't had nobody to practice some defects character on for a couple years. That's all. You just thought you were well. And she said, let me tell you something about that step seven. She said, God does remove our defects of character when we ask him to, but he never removes our ability to take them back anytime we feel that they will be useful to us. I knew there was a catch. And I'll tell you what, those defects of character, self-pity is my most ugliest defect of character. It most certainly is. I'll pout. And I do this thing, But I get over it. The difference between myself with 21 years, thank you God, and someone else that has 21 days is that I'm a little bit quicker to evaluate whether I want to suffer consequences or not. Okay? And I still like to have consequences now and again. And there's some of them defects of characters. I really like them. Okay? I've had it for so long. We're buddies, They don't work out so well, so they don't. And they kick my butt almost every single time. But I just love them. We snuggle, we spoon, And I had to do that, Karen. But the thing is that I will let go of them when I'm ready to let go of them, not when anybody else thinks I'm ready to let go of them. Because that was just like my drinking. I just don't use them. They're not on as grand of a scale as what they used to be. Mostly they're done in the quiet recesses of my mind, and they never make it out outside of Monalvin, you know, because I think better of it. Step 8, I had to go back. It says in step, it tells me in step 8 that I go back to that list and step forward. Okay? Three columns. She was big on this column thing. Okay? Easy ones, not so easy, and people I still want to slap upside the head with a 2x4. All right? And that's how I separated them, those omens. Now, I had to come to understand what an amends was. And is it time to get up? Angels! An amend is a condition of change. It's not an apology. It's not an I'm sorry. Okay? I had to be willing to make that list and look at those names and pray for the willingness to be willing to change the way I think about this person, the way I'm going to treat this person, and the way I'm going to speak about this person. Okay? Step 9, she was in Alabama at the time when I was her grandson. Just chose to be born when I was getting ready to do my 9th step. He did it just to inconvenience my stepmother. And conspiracy is what it is, I'll tell you. And so I went and I started making some easy amends. You know, the little girl that used to work in a Uni Mart that had to tolerate some of my drunken conversation. We'll put it that way. And you know, that was an easy one because she wasn't close. The last amends that I made was to that fellow that shot me in the head. And I know it sounds silly, right? The guy pokes, you know, shoots me. But you know what? I wasn't very nice to him either. I had to clean up my side of the street. Making amends ain't about what they did to me. It's about what I did to them. Several years ago, when I married my last, most recent ex-husband, I'm not collected anymore, I guarantee you. Okay. When I married him, he was in the program, and he went back out. And I experienced what I put my exes through. I experienced what it was like to live with an active addict. You know, I know what the fear, that terror is, you know, them not coming home, not knowing where they are. And I went back to 99% of the people on that 9th step list, or that A step list, and I re-amended myself because now I fully understood. You see, when I did that 9th step list, that 9th step the first time, I did it from my head. I feared to go back to drinking. Okay? But this last time that I did that 9th step work, and I went and made those amends, I did it from my heart. Because I understood the pain. Because I lived through it. Okay, I can't know something if I've never experienced it. I don't talk to people that don't have not experienced what I have am experiencing. Okay, because they don't know. They don't know. That's why it says in the doctor's opinion that we can hold the alcoholic, the drunk's attention more than somebody else because our stories have depth and weight. We know each one of us knows what the other's gone through. We might not have experienced it exactly, but we understand the feeling. You know, we understand. You guys all know what I went through. You know, if I talk about being 3 o'clock in the morning and you only have 6 beers left and 4 cigarettes, you know the panic. You know? You know what it's like to be, you know, having your spleen laying in the toilet, you know, and trying to put it back down in there. That's not ever any good. You know what it's like to live in abject terror. You know, and you understand that. People outside don't get it, you know. So 10th step says, I understood what them people went through is what I'm saying. That's why I can understand it with my heart. That's why we understand each other. We talk to each other from the heart. We don't talk to each other from the head. Okay? And so I understood the pain that I put these people through. And many of them said to me, Jack, you've already done this. It's like, not this time, not this way. This is different. I cried with them. And I didn't ask for forgiveness. I didn't. Who am I to ask them for their forgiveness? And step 10 says, continued. Uh-oh, so that means I must have been doing something prior to, right? Take personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. Well, there's a real catchword here, and that's the word promptly. See, promptly for me used to be 5-6 years. You know where I'm going with this, right? Today, it could mean 4 or 5 days. It's like recently. I haven't seen her recently. Well, that could have been 7 years ago or 7 seconds ago. You know, but promptly admit it. Well, in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, there's 4 parts to that. It tells me I talk to God, talk to somebody I trust, make amends where necessary, and then go out and help others. Okay? So that's sort of like that what them old timers used to tell me when I first walked through the doors, which I don't hear much anymore. And that's trust God, clean house, and help others. You know, that's what I was told when I walked through the door. You know, I was also told this isn't a feelings program. And I believe it. Pete said to me one time, she said, if I make you mad with telling you the truth, she said, if I make you mad with something I tell you, it's because there's a grain of truth in what it is that I'm telling you that you ain't willing to face. Wow. She's a tough woman. You know? And so that's step 10. When I'm wrong, I will admit it sometime. Sooner than I once did. You like that? You're free to use that at any given point in time if you feel necessary. Step 11, okay? This prayer and meditation thing, product of the 60s, thought I was going to have to sit on four burning incense going on. Or that they were going to have me, y'all was going to have me shave my head and have that little doohickey on the back of my noggin and stand me down there at the Pittsburgh airport selling incense and daisies, okay, to passersby getting off the airplane. I wasn't sure what was going to happen with this prayer and meditation stuff. I just didn't know. All right? And then I went to one of them A&A conferences down there, Cook Forest, and I heard a little woman up there who I could hardly see because she was really short, and I put her on a milk carton. You could still only see her like this. Okay? And she said that prayer was when I asked God for stuff, and meditation was when I shut my trap and listened. All right? Well, I do pray. My prayers have gone from, oh, God. You know, because I thought that's what was required. There ain't nothing wrong with that. If it works for you, it doesn't work for me. I call God Dad most of the time. You know, he's my father when I need corrected and grounded and disciplined and all like that there. But he's my dad when we ride motorcycles together. Or when I'm driving down the right road, you know, and the song comes up into my head. Have I told you lately that I love you? You know, and I sing to God because he likes that. You know, he does. And at least my God does. Meditation for me is just experiencing the beauty of creation. It's not. It's absorbing. It's allowing the positive energy of the universe. Oh, God, I just sounded like a hippie. It's a positive power, you know, entering my soul, man, you know, and absorbing it and allowing it to absorb me because it is bigger than me, all right? And my prayers are real simple. I still say the same prayer I've been saying for 20 years. As soon as I realize I'm on this side of the dirt and my peepers open up, Lord, thank you for giving me another day. Didn't ask for it, don't deserve it. Gave to me anyway. For that, I'm eternally grateful. Thanks for the warm roof over my head. Thank you for the toilet paper. If you never had toilet paper, you know what I'm talking about. Thank you for the coffee pot that's electric. It's already brewing. I smell it. Da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, thanks for the electric. Thanks for water that I can take a shower. You know, thanks for the electrical. Thanks for, and I start with that gratitude list because, as I said, attitude of gratitude is the only thing that's going to keep me sober. All them steps are wonderful, enlightening process, okay? But for me today and where in my walk today, it's the attitude of gratitude. It's being humbled before all of this stuff. It's being humbled before you. It's being humbled to be asked here tonight and doing this deal, okay? That's my prayer. God, you know, I don't. Thanks. Talk to you later. Love you. Bye. You know, I can be honest with God, and when I'm upset, I can tell him something. And he don't care as long as I ain't using his name in vain, what it is that comes out my face, because he knows what's in my heart. And if I'm trying to be thou and be appropriate, and I'm lying to God. A couple years ago, almost 2 years ago, my man was killed in a head-on collision. Okay, half a mile from my house, I could see the place where he left this dimension, right through my living room window. And I got really upset with God. And I went out in a place up in the forest called Seneca Point, and I stood up there and I screamed all kinds of foul language, and I was upset because I could not understand why he did this. Why did you take this man in the bliss of our relationship? I've never had a relationship like this before in my life. I never felt so much as a woman and loved and cared for ever. And you took this man from me. I lost gratitude for the time I did have with him. I lost the gratitude for the love that I felt, that I was able to receive, that I was able to give away. It's okay for me to be real with God. And if I could be real with God, then I could be real with me. And if I could be real with me and God, I could be real with you. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I just talked about it, man, that's the real thing. I don't believe I was spiritually dead when I walked through the door. Now I was spiritually comatose and working these steps and coming around and you people loving me until I could love myself as my IV bottle, man. You were my medicine that brought me up out of that coma. You know, and seeing the light in your eyes gave me the hope. Last year, I had the honor and privilege of being invited up to the old timers, you know, when they induct us into the new kids on the block deal. And I was just amazed. I was just amazed. It 20 years, you know, 20 years of being sober. It still baffles me. It just seemed like yesterday I was, you know, burping beer. I still do that every once in a while. I'll wake up and I'll burp beer because I had a drinking dream or something. You know, that's goofy. And but one of the things that because I'm standing there and they call you up and my voice was shaking and I was all nervous. Because there's 47 years of sobriety, you know, out there, and all these old timers sitting out there, and they're all looking at me smiling all pretty, you know, and I'm like, oh God, if you only do, I want to pee my pants right now. Because I was like, so, I didn't know what to say. It's like getting your first lead. The only thing that God put this in my head, he said, I, and I'm going to say to you old timers that came in before me, thank you for being here when I got here, because you guys gave me hope. And for you people that have come in after me, thank you for coming in the doors, because you guys give me the courage to continue on one more day. Just one more day. That's all I got. I don't live in tomorrow. I don't live in next week. I live in today, because this is it. Four months after my man was killed, my mother died of cancer. I watched her die. I lost my job. Okay, they closed on the store that I worked at. My son, my youngest son, was in and out of jail 5 times in that period of time. My middle son, I hadn't seen him. I didn't know where he was at. Hadn't heard from him. And you know, I truly know what it's like to walk through God's grace. And the most powerful thing about that whole time is that I'm still standing here. I'm still standing here, sober, living happy, joyous, and free, despite the pain that I got going on in my heart. Okay? God, there's a song, God is an awesome God. I can't even describe Him. I don't know how, other than God is love. And He expresses that love in these rooms. You know, when we love each other, you know, truly love one another. And it's just an awesome thing. You know, he just told me to shut up. So I'm going to honor that. And I want to thank you, Kim, for asking me to come down here, and Karen for making me giggle. We laugh so good. So, and these women that I'm going to, I almost said, these women I'm going to sleep with tonight. Oh, yeah. $5. Okay, we're doing a two for on Friday night, okay? Dear Lord, we are not a glum lot, all right? We're not on the run down here from the time my friend Ron, thank you, Ron, for bringing me down here. I love you. From the time he picked me up at my daggum apartment, we laughed. And you know they say about laughter is like the best stomach exercise. I will have abs of steel when I leave here. Okay? I swear. But again, thank you so much for having me here. And I don't know if there's anything I said that might have helped you, you know, but you guys helped me by looking at me, and I could see the hope and the love in your eyes. So thank you very much. You know,